The British Broadcasting Corporation presents London Forum, the weekly program in which we bring prominent personalities to the microphone to discuss important topics of the day.
This is William Clark introducing this week's London Forum. We're going to discuss some of the problems of the atomic bomb, and I have with me in the studio today Bertrand Russell, the well-known philosopher and writer who gave last year's Reith Lectures on the BBC, and Professor Oliphant, the British atomic physicist who worked on the atomic bomb project in America and for a short time was working on the United States Atomic Commission. The reason that so many of us are thinking so much about the atomic bomb today, of course, is the fact, at least I presume it's a fact, that the Russians now possess an atomic bomb of their own. I suppose, Oliphant, there is no doubt that they do.
No doubt whatever. The evidence is scientific evidence and incontrovertible.
Well, what do you suppose are the immediate implications of such a realization on the part of the Western world that it no longer has the monopoly? Russell, what do you think?
I don't think the implications are very serious, except this, that it diminishes the time during which any project must succeed, if it is to count. We all knew that Russia would, before very long, have atomic bombs. The only question was when. And the fact that they now have them, I think, only puts a time limit on deliberations. That's the only effect it has.
Does it have any military results, do you think, Oliphant?
Well, I think it has rather profound military results. For instance, a landing of the type that was made in Normandy in the last war would be quite impracticable if the enemy had a few atomic bombs and the aircraft to deliver them with. The implications, therefore, so far as military strategy are concerned, are profound, and US and UK will seem to be forced back upon purely bombing and naval policy against an occupied Europe.
But what about the industrial results? Is there any chance now that we shall be able to push ahead with rather more industrial?
No, I think this new development, since it represents the beginnings of an atomic arms race, will set back the development of atomic energy for industrial purposes quite seriously. Partly because of the effort that's got to be devoted in that direction, partly because of the fact that the materials just won't be available for the more peaceful developments.
I don't want for a moment to seem to minimize the evils of an atomic arms race, which I think are quite incalculable. But I do think that the fact that atomic energy may not be available for ordinary industrial uses is not very important, because every improvement in industrial technique in the existing state of the world is used to increase the proportion of human labor that could be set apart for war, and is therefore an evil.
Well, I find, of course, as a scientist who's interested in technical development, this sort of idea very embarrassing and very discouraging. Somehow or other in my heart, I can't accept the idea that advance in knowledge, even though it does bring implications which are military, is an evil thing in itself.
I agree, of course, the knowledge, qua knowledge, is good. I think all knowledge is good. But given mankind as they are at this moment, command over nature is so very liable to be used for purely destructive purposes.
Yes, and can also equally be used for very constructive purposes. The problems of feeding the world, for instance, are scientific problems. And science can solve very many of them, we know at the moment. To hold back either scientific or technical advance because it might be misused seems to me to be conferring on ourselves or those who rule us the powers of a deity, and we'd never know what implications it holds for the future.
Oh, I wouldn't for a moment hold back any scientific advance for any reason whatsoever. But the question we were discussing was whether we should lament the fact that atomic energy is not likely in the near future to be used for industrial purposes, which is a different question.
Yes, I agree. It is a different question, but I still believe it's rather an important one.
But you don't think that there's any real chance that atomic energy will be used now for anything except military purposes? Which means, I suppose, doesn't it, that we're going to have an atomic arms race?
Well, an atomic arms race, yes. I think that's virtually certain, unless this change in the situation between U.S. and USSR brings about some new thinking about the problem of getting rid of this menace to our life, the problem of the control or abolition of atomic weapons and so on.
I should like to say over that it seems to me the West is not thinking quite realistically about this whole question. We are in a situation where, unless something can be done very soon, we are faced with an atomic war of incredible destructiveness, in which the West may or may not emerge victorious, but even if it emerges victorious, it will emerge crippled and with all the best things in it destroyed. And that is a problem about which we've got to do something rather drastic within the next 2 years at most.
I agree. But perhaps we may differ over what we've got to do. My feeling is that we've really got to get down to this problem of doing away with these weapons of mass destruction. In fact, of doing away with war itself. That may be silly and idealistic, but I think it's the crux of the whole problem. But the only alternative, of course, is an atomic arms race in which we hope to be preponderant at all times.
Well,
I wonder if we are going to discuss, as I would like to, the question of doing something to stop an atomic arms race, whether we could take, first of all, the method of trying to stop an atomic arms race by a moral convention against the use of atomic energy in war. We had such a convention, which seems to have been moderately successful, against gas in the last war. Do you think that a moral convention, such as is being discussed at the United Nations, would be of any value, Russell?
Of absolutely none. We had a moral convention against gas in the first war. The fact that it was not used in the second war had nothing whatever to do with any moral convention. It was merely that neither side thought it would pay to use it. And a moral convention is perfectly absurd. Think of the Kellogg Pact. Those sort of things simply don't count. They're just eyewash.
I agree with Lord Russell in this matter.
Well, I think there must be some people who do feel that, however small a hedge against an atomic arms race, a moral convention would at least make it harder for one nation to drop the first atomic bomb.
But we've already done that. We've already dropped the first atomic bomb. And surely it's somebody else's turn now.
Well, that's rather a depressing view of the chances of a moral convention. What other possibilities are there of stopping an atomic arms race by means of international agreement?
Well, I still believe that there is hope that the fundamental substance of the Baruch plan may be adopted. It is, in fact, a good plan and a workable plan from the technical point of view. It may be that it goes too far in some of its assumptions. Its assumption of international ownership, for instance, of the means of production, even of the product from the mines and so on. But in essence, it should work. Perhaps now it will be discussed in the Atomic Energy Commission of the United Nations with more realism, with some greater sense of urgency that something's got to be done than covered these discussions in the past.
I agree entirely about the Baruch plan. I quite think it's open to modification, modifications that wouldn't destroy its essential merits. I think it was an act of extraordinary statesmanship and generosity on the part of the United States to propose it when they did. And I think we ought to give them credit for that. But I have very little hope that anything will be achieved now by reviving proposals like that. I think less hope than before the Russians had the bomb. I think the thing that will vitally stand in the way is the necessity for adequate inspection. I think if the Russians concede inspection, they will concede it with limitations which will make it valueless. I don't think that anything in Russia will bear inspection.
Well, I don't altogether agree with you, Russell. I think that it is worth exploring this problem. It's always easier for people to agree if they're more or less equal in their power and in their influence. And this brings the state of affairs nearer a state of equality. There's no longer that inferiority complex which I think characterized some of the early thinking about this problem on the part of the Russians. But the other point I'd like to make is that an inspection system can be very effective even if it's not 100% perfect. An inspection system that prevents any country from accumulating large numbers of atomic bombs is far more valuable than no inspection system, even if it doesn't prevent a few from being made in some hole by some hole and corner method. One bomb, or even 10 bombs, or 100 bombs, is never going to make one country able to dominate the world, but 1,000 might.
Now, I should like to bring up against you at this point what you said a moment ago, that a very small number of bombs would make such an operation as the landing in Normandy impossible. And an operation of that sort is essential if the West is really to win a war.
Yes, but you yourself made the point that even if we did indulge in an atomic arms war, that the result would be inconclusive. All that you are stating now is my opinion that it would be inconclusive, it would be stalemate if they possessed atomic bombs, so far as our ever landing and reconquering Europe was concerned.
Well, that, do I understand you to say that if a war were to break out in the near future, the whole of the western part of the continent of Europe would be forever under the domination of Russia?
I don't think any country can ever be dominated forever by any other country if it doesn't want to be. But I suppose all human beings think of their own generation. In the long run, of course, biologically speaking, the right answer may be not to fight and let whoever wants to walk over the world walk over it. But that doesn't satisfy us or our children or our immediate aspirations.
I don't know quite what our children do think. I'm an old man, and I can envisage, with a certain calm, a future in which a great many people now living will not be alive, because in any case I shall be among them. But I don't know that my children would quite take that view.
Perhaps not, but I suppose it's one of the prerogatives of the scientist to remain an idealist. Because he is a scientist, perhaps he doesn't know a great deal about human reactions. But to my mind, this problem of finding some way of avoiding war, other than by going to war or other than by an arms race, is absolutely essential to our future. And I think that unless we explore every avenue, even the Russian avenues, and see whether by some twist they can be made workable, we're in for a very bad time.
I agree with you. I think we are in for a very bad time. I'm entirely in favor of exploring every avenue, but what I am not in favor of is allowing what you call idealism to persuade us that an avenue is an avenue when it isn't.
No, perhaps I'm wrong there, but I, in my heart I feel that the right thing to do is to find some way out of war.
I agree.
Can't get away from that.
What do you think, Oliphant, has so far been the main difficulty in any progress with the Baruch plan?
Well, to my mind, first of all, of course, there was this problem of inspection, the insistence by the Americans and the British on a 100% perfect plan, which would prevent anybody anywhere from ever making one atomic bomb. And I think that's just as hopeless as to try to prevent a man from brewing some beer in his cellar. But the point is that the beer that the man brews in his cellar isn't significant from the point of view of the country's beer production. Similarly, I don't think that the atomic bomb which is made in a cellar is really significant from the point of view of world war. And it's world war that we've got to consider. Britain is peculiarly vulnerable, and one atomic bomb may be very nasty for London or Birmingham or Glasgow, but it's not going to make any country able to dominate us or dominate the world. That is the first point. The second point is the introduction into the scheme of world ownership, international ownership, without there existing beforehand any sort of real international understanding, setting up an authority which could undertake the ownership. The result is, of course, that countries that possess uranium or other materials are just as reluctant to give up their own national rights in them as countries which possess oil or coal or any other means of production or of making war.
Well, Oliphant, I'm not prepared to argue with you about ownership. Well, I think probably your opinion is quite right. But as to this 100% safety, it seems to me that if you're to have the degree of inspection which would prevent an absolutely first-class manufacture of atom bombs in some region in Siberia, you will have to have a degree of inspection which the Soviet government would find quite intolerable.
Well, I think we've got to be quite sure about that. So far, the Russians have said that they are prepared to discuss inspection. You may remember that in the discussions, they went a long way towards meeting our views about the type of inspection that should be employed, and in the end agreed that inspection had to be reasonably thorough. Now, it hadn't been very clearly defined from the technical point of view. I think it should be defined, and that an attempt should be made to see whether the Russians, in fact, will agree to a type of inspection that will give us reasonable security.
Well, I quite agree it should be discovered whether that is so, because if they will, then that does go a very long way to solving our problems. But I do think it's not likely that they would agree to anything satisfactory.
Well, perhaps you know more about them than I do, but no. I can't help imagining that the ordinary Russian man or woman doesn't want war any more than I do. And after all, even in an autocracy of that type, I imagine there must be some way for members of the community to indicate to their rulers that they're not very happy about certain actions that they've been taking, or certain lines of policy that they're pursuing. In the end, I think the people matter.
I don't believe that is right. I'm quite convinced that the ordinary Russian doesn't want war any more than the ordinary British subject or American citizen wants war. But I don't think that the opinion of the ordinary Russian counts. Doesn't count a button.
One thing that you mentioned, both Russell and Oliphant, was that the international inspection that would be necessary would have to be extremely rigorous. I had understood, and I'd like to know what you think about this, Oliphant, I had understood that it was possible to have international inspection of the use of atomic weapons, and that would mean surely any experimentation with them, which was quite effective without entering into the country at all. You say that there is complete proof that there was an atomic explosion in Russia, but we presumably didn't have spies attending the function.
Yes, but that's a very different matter. You see, once a bomb goes off, it produces all sorts of effects which can be measured. But the manufacture of a bomb doesn't produce any more effects than the manufacture of a motor car. If we can't determine whether the Russians are manufacturing motor cars behind the Urals, then we can't determine whether they're manufacturing atomic bombs. The only way to inspect and see whether people are misusing fissile materials and changing them into weapons is to look on the spot and see what is actually happening.
And that, you are convinced, the Russians will never really allow us to do.
I don't think so. I think they might pretend to, but only in ways that they would know they could circumvent. That's my view.
But if any progress is to be made with the atomic bomb, as has been made by the United States, they have had to have two, or is it three, explosions of atomic weapons since the end of the war. I should have thought that the Russians, if they could not do that, if we could not have any progress in the production of atomic weapons, that at least would be something in the way of a victory for international inspection, even of a rather weak kind.
Yes, I think that's probably true. As a matter of fact, I think one of the really significant things will be how soon can Russia make another atomic explosion. Because that will give us some indication of how fast she can make atomic weapons. I suppose that's the last thing she'll want to do, to conceal that information from us. But this problem of what she has done and how fast she can go in the future is not at all related to the problem of making this one atomic bomb. One can make one atomic bomb reasonably quickly, especially if you're pretty ruthless with regard to human life. These problems of making atomic energy, making atomic bombs, are surrounded with hazards to human life. And it may be that if one doesn't care very much about what happens to your operatives, you can make much more rapid progress.
Russell, do you believe that there is any chance that there would be some preventive by stockpiling of atom bombs in Europe as opposed to having them stockpiled only in the United States, which is, after all, a long way away from Russia?
I really don't know. That's a question of military strategy on which I shouldn't like to have an opinion. My only opinion in the matter is this, that the only hope for the world is a vigorous use of superiority of force on our side during the next 2 years or so for the purpose of inducing or, if necessary, compelling the Russians to come into a system of international control.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that entirely. I think that maintenance of our superiority in this matter is all important, provided it's accompanied by positive attempts to secure some sort of agreement on international control.
Yes, only as to that, I think we should scan any proposed agreement very, very closely, remembering that agreements formally concluded with Russians, as for example during the time of the Berlin blockade, turn out to be not carried out by them afterwards, and that therefore an agreement is no use unless you have means of finding out whether it is being carried out.
No, that is true, but one's also got to remember that the making of atomic weapons, once one's obtained fissile material, is an extremely simple thing. So that supposing we did agree not to make atomic weapons, and then afterwards found that our international agreement wasn't honored by the Russians, it wouldn't take us long at all to resume the manufacture of atomic weapons. In other words, once, by giving up making atomic weapons, by accepting inspection inside one's own country, provided one's facilities remain, one is not giving up the possibility for more than a very short time of making atomic weapons as you want them.
Well, may I say, as a corollary to that, that if what you say is correct, an international agreement about atomic weapons is almost worthless, because if nobody makes atomic weapons in time of peace, a war won't be finished quickly, and there'll be plenty of time to make them after the war has begun, so that your agreement is totally worthless.
Well, that's one view, but I'd like to think of it the other way, that it does mean that one can make such an agreement without totally giving up one's ideas of national safety and relying entirely on the other chap's good word. After all, you just now demanded some sort of safeguard, some sort of evidence that the system of inspection proposed would really prevent war. Now, you know as well as I do that in an age of technical advance, a technical system of inspection that one lays down this year may be invalidated by something that happens in the next year or so, some technical advance, some scientific discovery. We've always got to be prepared for that. Therefore, I think that we've also got to be prepared for the fact that the other chap doesn't play the game.
Yes, and that is why the isolation of this question of atomic bombs is a little unrealistic. The real thing is to prevent war. And it doesn't very much matter whether you make war by atomic bombs or by other methods. The thing is that you've got to have no war. And you've got to find a method of preventing war. And that is a very difficult thing.
I agree entirely. The only point about the atomic bomb is that it's sufficiently big and important weapon to focus attention on this problem of the prevention of war as it's never been focused before.
But if we are to try and prevent war as well as preventing atomic war, I wonder what, to be quite specific, what proposals we should now be making in the United Nations, we as the United Kingdom, or we as part of the Western world. How, for instance, Oliphant, would you try to improve, if at all, on the Baruch proposals in the hope of making them acceptable?
I don't think I'd improve on them very much at all, except to perhaps remove one or two of the things that I mentioned just now, like the extreme rigidity of the plan as originally envisaged, and also this question of international ownership. I would not be against international ownership if we only faced up beforehand to the problem of who is going to do the owning. And that involves such things as an international authority, international world government, if you like. Maybe rather an idealistic conception at the present time, but just happens to be one of those things that's worth looking into, in my opinion.
Do you think, Russell, that there is any alternative to some form of world government as a possible method of preventing war?
The only alternative, which isn't really an alternative, is the hegemony of some one power. I think if you had one power strong enough to keep all the rest of the world under, although it might not be pleasant for the rest of the world, at any rate, there wouldn't be war.
That's a state of affairs that never seems to last. In history, the power that dominates always, for some reason or other, seems to dwindle away.
Well,
it's rotten and corrupt and breaks up.
I don't think that's quite valid. The Roman Empire lasted about 6 centuries, which is a very long time indeed. And if we could get 6 centuries of peace, we should feel ourselves very happy.
But that was 6 centuries in the days of horse transport and no radio, no communications. To my mind, that 6 centuries nowadays would be compressed into 6 years.
I don't think that's valid.
Well, I think now I must bring this discussion to a conclusion. We began by saying that we felt that there was no doubt whatsoever that the Russians did possess the atomic bomb, and that now that the monopoly of the Western world had been broken, we were faced with a new situation. It had military results. It meant that, for instance, it would be extremely difficult for us ever to carry out an invasion such as that of Normandy in 1944. It had rather sad industrial results. It meant that there was very little chance that atomic energy would be used for peaceful purposes. And lastly, it meant that inevitably there was going to be an arms race unless some method could be found of establishing international control of atomic energy. We discussed the possibility of a moral convention against the use of atomic bombs, but neither Russell nor Oliphant thought that there was any great virtue to that. We then discussed the problems of international inspection, which is the only other practical method. And Russell felt that on the whole there was no chance that the Russians would accept it. Oliphant suggested that we might go ahead to try and see whether possibly the Russians might happen to accept it. But I can't pretend that either of them were extremely optimistic. Then, finally, we concluded by saying that of all the possible methods of avoiding an atomic war, the only way was to try and avoid war altogether. And it seemed to be the conclusion of both that some sort of world government was the only hope for that end.
You've been listening to a discussion in the weekly series London Forum, recorded in a studio of the BBC. The speakers were Bertrand Russell and Professor Oliphant, with William Clark in the chair. This is the British Broadcasting Corporation.